The voice we need more than ever. Dan Newman. TNN. The Truth News Network.
As you know, Steve Baker comes on board the show every Tuesday. And it's because he's an investigative journalist. He's digging into things that we at Truth News Network don't have the capacity to do. He is one of those diggers. He doesn't quit until he gets answers. Well, his quest has been on the all-out facts of the January 6th Insurrection Act that happened. And he's been telling us for the last couple of Tuesdays there's something big that he is working on. He can't tell us what it is, but he's teased us. Maybe, just maybe, today's the day, because he called me this morning and said, hey, got something big here. You want to wait till next Tuesday or tell the people today? And I said, no, let's don't wait. Come on aboard and bring us up to date with what you have. So, Mr. Baker, the floor is yours.
Well, man, I hate to disappoint you, but I still can't tell you the good stuff. This is this tweet storm I did last night was about 44 different tweets in a row consecutively. And for those of your listeners who don't follow Twitter and know how that works, you are limited on a per character basis per tweet, but you can also then link those together and string a narrative or a story together in a single tweet. And a lot of people like that. They are getting to the point, like this new Twitter files thing that we've been watching, that Elon has had several other independent journalists that are doing this type of Twitter dump. And people are enjoying that type of thing. So I thought yesterday, as I was actually writing an article about what we're about to talk about now, I thought, you know what? I'm just going to give it a shot, and I'm going to release this as a tweet storm rather than a traditional article. So the bottom line is that I'm still sitting on the good stuff. I still can't release the good stuff, but I have enough information from our research that I was able to cobble together from all the public available sources to actually introduce somebody that was a key figure in the January 6th story that most Americans don't know about. Now, obviously, attorneys know about her, and people like myself that are doing investigative work on this story, that we have known about her for a long time. But there's so much more yet to come. But let's just go ahead and dive into this. I want to introduce your audience, for those who did not see the tweet storm last night, to Miss Yogananda Pittman. Yogananda Pittman, that's a mouthful right there. Now, she was, on January 6th, she was the United States Capitol Police Assistant Chief for Protective and Intelligence Operations. And as a matter of fact, she was the one, or is at that time, she was the one that oversaw all of the United States Capitol Police intelligence-related entities. And in that tweet storm, I even published a graphic, flowchart of what departments the intelligence divisions of the United States Capitol Police that she oversaw. Basically, what I'm saying, Dan, is anything related to the intelligence of that event had to come across her desk.
Hold on right there. Mm-hmm. You're telling us that this woman, and what's her name again?
Yogananda Pittman.
Okay.
We'll call her Miss Pittman.
Okay. Miss Pittman was the person that was, during that day, she was totally in charge of receiving and disseminating via radio, I assume, to all of the Capitol Police force information regarding the details of things that were expected to be going on and were going on. She was the...
Well, more importantly, she was in charge of the intelligence that happened and that was received before January 6th and the days and weeks leading up to it, that she then failed to pass along to not only her downrank commanders, but also the frontline officers that were defending the Capitol that day.
Now, that's not a little bitty thing. I mean, that should have been one of the things that was front and center when this January 6th committee, if you can call them a committee, it was a kangaroo court, but they should have had this, at least this, had her testimony in front of the committee. She didn't even testify, did she?
To my knowledge, she did not testify for that committee, but more pointedly, and certainly this is something which a lot of questions are being asked about, is how could somebody with such an important role, and let's not understate or overstate what her role is. She was the assistant chief that day in charge of intelligence, and secondarily, she was sitting in the command center, command chair that day, monitoring and watching or listening to all the radio transmissions from the United States Capitol Police as events were unfolding. She also was sitting in that, you know, big swivel chair in their command center where she had access to all the closed circuit television cameras. And there's dozens of them around the campus. So she could see those all as everything happened, as every breach of a barricade, every breach of a door, smashing of a window, attack against one of her officers happened. She was able to see those things happening on screens in her command center. And yet, she did nothing.
Okay, now break it down for us. What things were going on? And obviously she missed them. And so the people that worked for her, that she was connected to during these many hours of all this stuff going on, did she not do things that, if were done, would have changed the results of what we saw?
Well, let's just talk about the order of the day when it comes to the ranking and the command structure of an organization, like it will, like most any large law enforcement agency. In this particular case, she was the number two to Chief of Police Stephen Sun. So she, in fact, her call sign is Unit 2. So I'm assuming then that Chief of Police Sun on that day, his call sign would have been Unit 1. But her call sign being Unit 2, she had the command over everyone else below her in that structure, whether they were inspectors, whether they were captains, lieutenants, and she was AWOL. Now, when I say AWOL, as I said already, she was watching the screens. She was on the radio. We did hear her voice twice on those radio calls, but she was otherwise AWOL all day as her officers on the front line that were taking a beating in the battle areas. And let's be honest. I know a lot of people, particularly from our persuasion, political persuasion, don't think that a significant level of violence took place on January 6th. Well, I'm here to tell you that I was there and saw with my own eyes, and it did. There was, in fact, even deadly force used. It wasn't successful, but there was deadly force used against some of those law enforcement officers from some of these rioters. And so they were up against it, and they were obviously outnumbered by the thousands in the crowd. Now, thousands in the crowd were not attacking officers. It was just a few dozen and up to a couple hundred, maybe, that were actually engaged in violence against those officers. But those officers didn't know that. They didn't know that it was only a couple hundred ne'er-do-wells, that maybe we might have learned also that they may have been paid instigators. But the point being is they didn't know it. They're just looking out over that crowd and seeing thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people continuing to come up on them. Can you imagine the fear that they were under at that time, not knowing what was on the belts of those thousands of people approaching them? Point being is that Ms. Pittman could see all of that as well from the closed circuit televisions, because they had cameras mounted, not only pointed at the Capitol, but obviously from the Capitol building pointed out. They could see every single corner, every quadrant, every approach point to the Capitol from those CCTV cameras.
Her missing or not doing these things, relaying that information to her officers that were literally on the front lines of everything that was happening, they were scared to death. They had to be fearful. They had no idea how bad it was. And remember, in the buildup to it, they were told for weeks and weeks, there's going to be some people, but it's not really a big deal, even though the FBI and other agencies had informed House Speaker Pelosi and Majority Leader Schumer in advance that they probably need to consider having not just the Capitol Police en masse there and armed, but they turned down even having National Guard agents that Donald Trump, then president, himself reached out to the military and said, look, we need you to be in Washington, D.C. We're getting word there's some bad stuff that's going to happen. Pelosi and Schumer said, nope. And they had the say-so over the president because it's the U.S. Capitol that they control.
That's right. That's their building. But on that day, it was actually Pelosi and McConnell. Schumer was not in charge yet. The Congress had not turned over yet, and McConnell was still in charge.
Wow.
So it was actually McConnell and Pelosi on that day. And their two sergeants at arms, Irving over the House and Sergeant of Arms Stinger over the Senate, they both also, in the published testimonies that we have, claimed that those that they were answering to felt like that having the National Guard on site that day was not a good look for the Capitol. And that was basically the reason for it being turned down, not for political purposes, not for any other reason, but because they didn't think it was a good look for the Capitol that day.
Both Pelosi and McConnell live in a world of symbolism over substance. If it doesn't look good, we can't do it. Forget about the fact that there are going to be thousands of people that are injured and a lot of ne'er-doers out there doing all kind of stuff. And probably would be much more. How did all of this come together and this woman be sitting at the head of it that day and no actions were taken?
And this is what I've been able to put together, as I said, from open source information that we have, because as you know, and as we've talked about, in the last couple of weeks, I have another stack of stuff, another pile of information I can't talk about yet because it's still under court seal, or it's marked as sensitive or highly sensitive by the Department of Justice, or they are FBI documents that are still marked sensitive. And even though I can't talk about those, and I have to compartmentalize my brain so I don't let one of those things slip in and get myself in trouble. But from the open source intelligence, we know that these officers on the line, all the way up to and including lieutenants that day, were screaming into their radios saying, what is the plan? What is the plan? We need help. We need to know. They're begging for information. And their command, their top-level command person on that radio, was silent the entire day. She did not speak up. Ms. Pittman did not speak up till 2 p.m. And at exactly 2 o'clock, on January 6th, you heard her voice for the first time, and she said, and I quote, at this time, we're ordering a lockdown of the Capitol building. Lockdown the Capitol building. Well, as soon as she said that, the very next response on the radio was from the United States Capitol Police Inspector Tom Lloyd, who actually quite derisively said and responded to her, that was done a long time ago, because he himself had ordered the lockdown of the building an hour earlier. How could she not know that, Dan? Is she that incompetent that she was unaware of what was taking place on the ground?
Well, there are only two explanations or answers for it, Steve. One is that, as you said, she was incompetent. The second is there were orders coming from somewhere else that said, don't intervene.
Mm-hmm. And that's all that's left, Dan, when you parse this all out and you ask all the questions, and we always, and I think even you and I have talked about this before, you always want to first come down on the side of government incompetence before you get to government malfeasance or malevolence. And
I'm opposite of that, because this was a House Speaker Nancy Pelosi falderall. I came down on what did Pelosi do this time?
Yeah.
I think the conspiracy thing fits here.
But isn't that where our government has now led us, especially in the last 3 years, especially since COVID came to town, is just we automatically knee-jerk to the side of malevolence instead of just what should be, because we know the larger the government, the more incompetent it's going to be. And in this particular case, her own officers. Now, this is a very, very interesting situation here. So not only was she either A, incompetent or malevolent on the day, but her own officers, those in her command, vastly, we're talking about 92% of those voted in a union vote, no confidence vote, for Ms. Pittman. Now, this was further, let's just say it gets more interesting because the day after January 6th, Stephen Sun, who was the Capitol Police, the chief of police at the time, was forced to resign. And she, being the number two, she immediately became the acting chief for about 6 months. And she did not get that job permanently because of that no confidence vote. She had 92% of her officers gave her a no confidence vote based on her performance that day. And as a result of that, as I said, she did not get the permanent position as chief of police of the United States Capitol Police, but she was given her old job back as the assistant chief heading over intelligence and protective services. So she did get her job back, which she held until December. Technically, she's still in that position right now. But on February 1st, she has a brand new job. And she has been now hired as the chief of police for the University of California at Berkeley, maybe the most liberal school in America, certainly one of the most liberal, far left, progressive communities in America. It's a subdivision, as you know. Berkeley basically is a community suburban area of San Francisco. And we know where Ms. Pelosi comes from. We also know who she's related to, which is Governor Gavin Newsom out there, who also happens to sit on the Board of Regents of University of California at Berkeley. And Ms. Pittman has not just only been given a cushy job out on the West Coast, 3,000 miles away from where she, as they say, screwed the pooch on January 6th, but more importantly than that, when you look at the brand new final release from the January 6th House Select Committee, 850 pages, their final, the stamp from the committee, Ms. Cheney and all the others. Guess whose name does not appear in that report at all?
That in the dump of Twitter tweets that you put out last night was the most alarming thing to me. I mean, not because of her, but because of our government, because of Nancy Pelosi, because of nobody, not a single witness in those committee hearings was cross-examined. It was all a charade. It was all something that happens in places like, Russia. And it's happening right here in the United States. What do you think? This, her name not being in any of the documents, not called to testify, never anybody, even those that came that were working there that did perform as witnesses, her name wasn't mentioned. You would think the officers that were testifying, the very fact that you said they did a no confidence vote, 92% of those officers voted that she was not good at her job, at least that day. Mm-hmm. Her name wasn't even mentioned. What is that all about? What do you think it's all about?
Again, Dan, we have to draw conclusions because we don't know the actual truth, the final answer yet. We're looking for it. We think we know what it is. We think that we know that Pittman is the key to Pelosi. I'm convinced of that, and that was the reason why that she was completely whitewashed out of the House Select Committee's report and now shipped off to the other side of the country to a cushy job, probably with a, you know, twice the salary as such. And this is her payoff to live comfortably on the West Coast and in the sunshine there with a university job, low pressure, in a highly, highly progressive community, and serve out her days quietly and protecting the secrets that she knows. Because that's the question. What did she know and when did she know it? Just like we've heard that question before about so many other things. And the bottom line is that Ms. Pittman knew about the dangers that were coming that day. She knew, she was warned by multiple agencies. There's a coalition of those agencies that put these papers together and put this information, put these warnings together, and they send them out. They were received by her. They were received as the head of intelligence. They were on her desk, and she claimed in multiple other hearings and testimonies that she did participate in that she had sent those to her down level commanders. And those commanders also under testimony, under oath, said, no, I never got it.
Okay, where does this go from here?
Well, where it goes for me and those who I'm working with right now, it, as you said at the top of this interview, that this just brings up more questions. And that's what we're in the middle of right now. We're chasing down now the answers to those other questions. And as I said, I'm not new on this train at all. I wrote this on February 24th of 2021, just 6 weeks after after January 6th. I wrote an article entitled "Who Was Up the Chain on January 6th," and I pointed one finger at Nancy Pelosi and I pointed one finger at Mitch McConnell. And I wrote that back in almost 2 years ago now. And that's one aspect of January 6th that my mind has not changed on. I have changed my mind and my perspective on a lot of aspects of January 6th, because as you get more information, more data, more video, you have more evidence. If you're an honest broker, you have to go with what you're seeing with your own eyes. And I've done that on many aspects of that day. But the one thing I have not changed my mind on is who manipulated or who allowed this thing to happen to that day. And I think right now we're on the right path. I think Pittman is the key to Pelosi, and we're gonna chase this one for very, very, very doggedly.
I think this, for me, the January 6th, everything that happened that day that we know that happened, that we were told that happened, and the reasoning, this just jumps to the top of that column for me. The other one, and you and I have never discussed this, and if you don't think we should right now, be sure and tell me. The killing of Ashley Babbitt. She was the only person that day, as a direct result of the Insurrection Acts, whatever you want to call it, she was in the Capitol. She was unarmed. She was breaking through one of those walls that are put up that are, you know, part glass, part wood. She was breaking in, following some people. And the cop, the Capitol Police cop, from behind her, shot her from behind her. The bullet severed her carotid artery, and she bled out on the floor. Now, the coroner of Washington, D.C., he made the official cause of death homicide. We've never heard any explanation plausible at all for the shooting. And of course, the policeman was never even investigated. That's my whoops on the other column. So I've got two now, and I will dance at your next wedding if you can give me the answer someday for both of those.
Well, I can speak with a lot of authority, unfortunately, about Ashley Babbitt's death and the officer who shot her, Lieutenant Michael Byrd. This is something that I spent as much or more time related to January 6th than anything else, because I am the last civilian to see Ashley Babbitt alive. And we can get into that story here, or we can just direct people to my Rumble video and I can show it to you. But I was there with the FBI medics and their tactical SWAT team when they were trying to save her life, because they had moved her downstairs to the south exit of the Capitol building to try and save her. And so they had picked her up and carried her down those stairs from where she was shot. And this was the area where I was, and this is not humorous, it's just it was the fact of the day. I had been, you know, on the Capitol grounds that day for quite a few hours, and I was looking for, no more complicated than the fact, I was just looking for a public restroom somewhere. And I had asked a Capitol police officer, was there one anywhere near? And she told me that she was not familiar with that part of the building, but I was welcome to go downstairs and look. So I found myself in a section of the Capitol by myself completely, looking for a restroom. And then another female USCP officer came up and took me by my right arm. And she came up to me and she said, "Can I safely escort you out of the building?" And I said, "Do I need to be?" She said, "Yes, sir, you do." And I said, "Okay, that's fine, because I'm obviously not going to resist. I wasn't there that day to resist anybody in any way. I was there doing journalism." So as she's walking me down this long hallway towards the south exit on the lower level of the Capitol, and I'll skip over a lot of the details of that story, but on my left, it came up in my vision immediately that about 6 feet from me was this tactical unit working on what I thought was a man, because I couldn't see. They had their hands on her chest, even though the shirt was off, and there was a tremendous amount of blood there on the floor. And all I could see was a pair of jeans and several men's hands working on trying to save somebody. And I shot my head back around to the officer who was on my right side. Babbitt was being worked on to my left. And I asked the officer, I said, "Is he shot?" She said, "Yes, he is." I said, "Who shot him?" She said, "We did." I said, "Why did you shoot him?" She said, "He pulled a gun on us." Now, this was just in the minutes after the shooting. We know about fog of war. We know about the squawk on these radios. The radios erupted. There was a tremendous amount of disinformation that was being passed. There was a lot of confusion in the moment. And as we say, the fog of war. So she had no idea. She didn't know that we were looking at a lady, and I didn't either. And I'm 6 feet from her. That's how, you know, that's what a pool of blood will do. We had to step aside right then, because at that very moment, the EMT units were coming in. I was the only civilian there. Everybody else was either first responders, FBI, United States Capitol Police officers. That's the only people that were in my presence at that time. Not a single other protester or rioter or anybody else was in that hallway.
Other than Ashley Babbitt.
Other than Ashley Babbitt. That's correct. That's correct. And so we had to step aside and allow the EMT and the gurneys to be brought in. Well, the officer escorted me the rest of the way to the door, and she said, "You know, please be safe." I said, "You too." And then, of course, knowing where I was, Dan, I knew that what must go in must come out that door. So I was actually on the south side in probably the only remaining secure police barricade at the Capitol grounds that day. And they still had their barricade secure on the south side door. And I was inside that barricade with the officers. So I just, I just walked down the ramp, walked around, and posted myself up right in front of that door, because I knew that if the gurney went in that door, that gurney was coming out that door, and I certainly was going to catch on my camera what was coming out. Still thinking it was a man that had been shot. 30 seconds later, the door opened. All of a sudden, you could see the heavily armed tactical units with their automatic weapons standing at the door. And then here comes the gurney, and they're working ferociously on her, pumping her chest, trying to give her, oxygen. And then I started following with my camera the gurney down the ramp. And for the first time, and you can hear me on my own video, I actually said something to the effect of, "Holy crap, it's a woman." And because now I could see her bare chest, and I could see her face, and I could see her blank eyes. And I knew right then that she was gone. And in fact, after I followed the gurney all the way down to where they took her and loaded her up, I then immediately stopped and I texted a couple of other individuals. And I said, "The shot's fired, a woman's been hit." And I actually said in that text, after I saw the gurney pass me and said, she's not going to make it. Of course, I didn't learn till an hour or so later that in fact, someone had died that day. But I am the guy that saw it. So you can imagine the emotional impact that it had on me that day. And as a result of that, how intensely I have followed the story of her killing since then. So that's a long setup to begin answering your questions about the Ashley Babbitt shooting, if you want to go there or if you want to save it for another day.
Why don't we do this? I think there's so much. I'm going to go back up to the top and tell you my thoughts. I think this entire incident, and I'm going to make it just one incident with tons of other sub-incidents, but I think it is rising to the level because of the unknown things that you and I don't know, but there are a lot of people that do know. It rises to the level of the assassination of former President JFK, John F. Kennedy. Mm. We may be 25, 30, 40 years from now, if you and I are still around on this show saying, what about that January 6th thing? I don't think we'll ever get all the answers, but I do believe there is someone and probably a group of someones that have all the answers. We just don't have access to
them. Have you seen that the committee is now wanting to seal their testimonies for 20 years?
Yes.
The House Select Committee. So it is like a JFK event. Of course, those records are still sealed here now 60 years later.
Yeah. Buddy, I appreciate all of your hard work. And now that we have gotten this chapter, I'm just going to ask you on the way out the door today, when are you going to give us the other stuff that you have teased us about now for 3 days? When's it coming?
Well, I'll tell you what's going to happen in order for us to do that.
Okay.
And it's not any more complicated than this. We are going to have to bring a couple of somebodies under whistleblower protection, or we have to get some of this evidence through the discovery process in some of these upcoming trials. We have to get that into that process, and therefore it then becomes public record because there's a witness on the stand or there's evidence that we are handing. We're showing this stuff to some of these legal teams. And I can tell you right now that in my discussions just a few days ago with one of those attorneys, they are contemplating issuing a subpoena to Ms. Pittman and having her testify in this particular trial. So if that happens, then that just itself opens up so much more to us, because if, for instance, Pittman is then given a subpoena and she obviously has to respond, and then whatever judge is overseeing that trial allows that testimony to go forward, she's going to be presented evidence about her activities that day, which means then those radio transmissions, which have never been made public, will have to be made public. That means also now the judge could limit that. He could limit it to just what she said between 2:00 and 2:08 p.m. on the day and still block out the rest of it. But it's possible that we can get the entire radio transmission into evidence. It's possible we can get the entire transcript of those radio transmissions into evidence. If that happens, that opens up a world of hurt for the Department of Justice, for the FBI, for the United States Capitol Police, for Yogananda Pittman, and others. And that's what we hope to see accomplished. If we can do that, then we can start talking about it publicly. So it's going to have to be either one of those two things, whistleblower or this information being placed into evidence in one of the trials.
Or you and I can just get on a conference call with Elon Musk and let him tell us what really went on. He seems to know about everything. Hey, listen, man, thank you so much for coming back today and sharing this with us. And not only did you give us a bunch of facts, but you whet our appetites as you do every Tuesday. So you'll be coming back this coming Tuesday, and you're going to have some more information to pass along. Maybe not about this.
I would
maybe about
a good chance.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, buddy, Happy New Year, Dan, and Happy New Year to everyone that's listening today.
Same to you. Have a great weekend, and we've got a bunch of new listeners, principally because of you, from Victoria, British Columbia. But on your way out of the show, you need to say hello to your buddies in Langley, Virginia, because they're back today.
Yeah. How many do we have from Langley today?
Three now.
Just three. Okay, so we don't have four pages like we had one day in the call.
Hey, buddy, have a great weekend. We'll see you Tuesday.
You're fighting back the tidal wave of deceit, lies, spin, and ignorance with TNN, the Truth News Network.